This is a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. I'm your host, Gary McGraw, CTO of Cigital and author of Software Security. This podcast series is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine. For more, see www.computer.org/security and www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is the 34th in a series of interviews with security gurus, and I'm pleased to have with me today Bill Brenner. Hi, Bill.
How are you?
Bill Brenner is a senior editor at CSO Online and CSO Magazine. He has a five-year history in security reporting and was previously a senior news writer at TechTarget in the Security Media Group. Bill has hosted a number of podcasts over the years, including Security Wire Weekly and most recently Security Insights. Bill lives with his wife, Erin, and two boys, Sean and Duncan, in Massachusetts, and he has a BA in English from Salem State College. Thanks for joining us, Bill.
Thank you. Some would call that a BS in English, but...
Really?
Well, that was...
Because of the... English is not a science. I have a BS in philosophy, so I know what you're talking about. So you've worked for two pretty diverse outlets in the technical security media,
right?
One being TechTarget and the other CSO Online.
Yes.
And I was wondering, how does the security message that you're trying to get across change according to the context of the audience that you're addressing?
Well, there's actually a pretty sizable difference. Not massive, but... you know, at Search Security, a lot of what the goal was breaking news.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whenever a new flaw was disclosed or whenever there was a worm attack, if you go back 5 or 6 years when we used to have those, now it's something different. But, you know, the goal was to get the news up much faster.
Right, so speed was of an essence.
Speed was of an essence. And now what we do at CSO is, you know, it's important to us to put fresh content up every day or more than once a day and keep giving people something of value. But the focus isn't so much on breaking news stories as it is on really delving deeper into issues that security professionals need to be looking at, you know, for those trying to find ways to deal with specific challenges and do their jobs more effectively.
So does that make TechTarget like CNN and you guys like The Economist, kind of?
To an extent, that's actually not a bad comparison. I guess the way I would put it is it's the difference between listening to, you know, in Massachusetts, WBZ News Radio, where it's all breaking news all the time, and NPR, where there's a lot more deep diving content.
Right, right. Yes, a few too many things considered for slightly too long. I listen to that show myself. So what's the biggest challenge in communicating security to senior executives of the sort that you guys target at CIO or CXO group?
Well, the real challenge is for our readers and their ability to communicate properly with the people above them.
I gotcha.
In order to get the security investments that they feel they need, or to get the manpower that they feel they need, or the technology. And the common frustration I've been hearing over the years is that sometimes upper management really doesn't get it. They get it if you pitch it to them in terms of we need to do this to be compliant,
mm-hmm.
but that there's a mindset that once some work is done on the security side and it's enough to satisfy a compliance checklist, that the work is all done.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, we can dial back on staff now and we don't need to upgrade this tool or that tool. So the big challenge for them is communicating with the people above to keep them interested.
And what do you think the secret to doing that properly is?
To be honest, I think the secret is really knowing how to write well.
Uh-huh.
And, you go back a decade and you probably wouldn't have heard that quite as much. But if you go in to a boardroom and you start to really get technical about a problem, whether it's a security vulnerability or you know, the nature of a database that you feel the need to wall off a little better. If you really just get into the weeds and technical, you're going to lose the top brass. They're
right.
Not going to be able to stick with you. But if you're able to really give it to them in concrete terms with concrete examples, layman's terms, then your chances of success are better. And I think one of the ways that you get your message across to them is through writing reports,
mm-hmm.
and you know, analyses. And that's actually something that the SANS Institute has picked up on in recent years, where they've really focused a lot more.
Sure, probably because of Mason, you know.
Yeah, you know, they've focused for a lot of their cert courses.
Well, you know, Mason used to run a division of Alcoa,
yeah,
and was a senior executive, so I think that sort of taught him what works because
right.
He was in the chair.
But so, it's a funny thing because of the blogging phenomena and because of things like Twitter, and people that are in this profession are a lot more out there writing and writing well,
mm-hmm.
about the issues that they're dealing with than when I first started covering security. You know, the whole stereotype when I started is totally out the window today of, you know, your IT security person as the propeller head wearing introvert.
Right.
You know, listening to death metal in their basement.
Right, it's become a real discipline. Yeah.
Yeah, now it's people are, you know, professional, wearing ties, or, you know, if you're not wearing ties, you know, speaking well, writing well, and really putting yourself out there publicly.
So here's a question. You guys have CIO properties and you have CSO properties too.
Mm-hmm.
Do you treat those kinds of executives the same way, or is there sort of a difference in depth of understanding or whatever between CIOs and CSOs?
That's not as easy to answer as you would expect, because I deal exclusively with the security side of things.
Right, so you're...
And there are other people that deal with the CIO side. But I can tell you from the CIOs I've talked to over time and the people that I work with who are on the CIO staff that there is a bit of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a chief information officer is concerned about security is one of their problems, but it's a lot broader than that as well. And so if you are a chief security officer or a chief information security officer or just more of an IT security manager type that isn't at a VP level, you know, one of the people that you need to be effective in reaching is that CIO person.
Gotcha.
So.
Yep.
So there's a bit of a difference there. It's depending on the company. My sense is that, you know, the CIO is a little higher up the food chain, though I don't think that's the case everywhere.
No, you're right. It does depend on the company, but that's a good characterization. Thanks.
Yeah.
So you've been podcasting for a while. How long, you think?
I think I did my first podcast in the fall of 2005, so not terribly long. But at Tech Target, I was doing them. We had a weekcast to start with, and I traded off. It would be, you know, I would do it 1 week, and then the news editor would do it, and then me, and then the news editor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more of a news headline highlights type of podcast.
Right,
and then we started adding flavors. There's Security Squad and all these other things that they're doing now. And so when I got to CSO, my big ambition was to really bring my multimedia experience into the fold.
Uh-huh.
And it was a good time to do it because earlier this year, CSO completely relaunched its website,
mm-hmm.
and has gone a pretty significant transition from, you know, the old model was your dominant property was the print magazine, and then you just had this website that kind of lagged behind, was there because you felt you had to have it. And now it's, you know, the online is our chief focus,
mm-hmm.
and we still have a print edition, but that's almost become the supplement.
Isn't that funny the way that the world is evolving?
Yeah, it really is. And you know, I give a lot of credit to CXO, the parent company,
yep.
Because they really started to get the fact that the online shift really had to.
As probably, you know, Gary Beach, he's a pretty clever guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Gary Beach and Mike Friedenberg, and Derek Slater is mm-hmm. pretty savvy on that end.
So you started your career some time ago as a night editor at a newspaper.
Yeah, before that, I was I started 15 years ago covering school committee meetings for a weekly newspaper in Swampscott, Massachusetts.
See, print media. So the question is the death of print media greatly exaggerated, or, you know, is it some crazy fractal mess that no one understands what exactly is going on?
exaggerated, perhaps. Greatly exaggerated, I'm not.
It's
I'm
on
not
life
sure.
support no matter which way you slice it.
Yeah, I still stay in touch with people that I've worked with all throughout my career who mm-hmm. are still in the print side,
mm-hmm.
and they're really struggling. They're circulation has taken a deep dive. The joke at one newspaper that I worked for was that every time a hearse drives by, there goes another subscriber.
That's really terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible, but it's true. It's, you know, that because the people who the core readership is now the old timers.
Right. Do you know Gunnar Peterson?
The name sounds vaguely familiar.
He's a blogger and a software security guy. He has a blog called One Raindrop, which is really good. But he is often railing on the New York Times about, you know, the death of media and all this stuff. And I know a couple of New York Times reporters, so I've aimed them at his blog and watched them yell at each other, which is kind of fun from time to time. So we actually have a habit of talking to reporters in the security space on Silver Bullet. And we've had some past victims like John Schwartz from USA Today and your friend Dennis Fisher.
Yep.
And so one of the questions I asked them, and I'm interested in asking you the same thing, is how do you strike a balance between sensationalism, which kind of sells ads and gets hits, and sober business-related coverage?
Yeah, I actually love this question because the major part of my switching from the world of general newspapering 5 years ago into more of a trade kind of journalism,
mm-hmm.
which is what this is now, was because I really started to lose my taste for what I thought was too much sensationalism,
mm-hmm.
the whole if it bleeds, it leads mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And, I can't get excited when there's a fire or, you know, a tractor trailer rollover and somebody is hurt.
Or TJX loses another 80 bajillion credit card numbers.
Now that's a little different because, and here's why.
I don't know, it sounds the same to me. Crash of the day, whatever.
so that's why I made the switch myself. But even on this side of the aisle, there is that never-ending line you have to straddle over. When do you, how much is responsible noise making
mm-hmm.
to get people aware of something that really is a threat to them and to their wallet? And when are you taking it too far just because you need to get some page views to your website?
Right, right.
And I think that's something that everybody struggles to figure out. you know, I think anyone who says, well, I shy away from attention-grabbing headlines, I don't think they're being 100% honest, because if you have some useful knowledge that's going to help somebody do their job better or use the internet a little more wisely, it's all for naught if they don't see your story.
Right. So you got to get their attention somehow.
So, you know, and it's funny, you know, you mentioned TJX, and one of the jokes back when I was at TechTarget was, whenever you could fit TJX into a headline, it was instant page view gold. So after a while,
you just start misspelling words with TJX.
Well, here's what happens. You start writing about something that isn't necessarily about TJX, but maybe it's kind of on the subject of data security.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start, you know, looking to put TJX-like things in headlines, and, you know, then that starts to get ridiculous.
Right.
And we actually had a joke at one point of how many headlines we could find a way to legitimately work TJX.
It's like counting somebody saying, you know, or in a speech.
Right.
Just count the number of TJX references.
Right. So, and then things like, you know, if the name Paris Hilton is in a headline, of all the stories I've done in 5 years, one of the biggest page view grabbers was this.
The T-Mobile hack?
Just this rinky-dink little, maybe it was 200 words of a story.
Uh-huh.
My byline wasn't even on it. I didn't feel comfortable. You know, it was basically cobbled together a couple of press releases. And, yeah, it was about Paris Hilton's address book getting abused.
We'll make sure to work Paris Hilton into the URL somehow here.
Right. So, boom. Tons of page views. And then, you know, that week, something else that I had, you know, really put a lot of effort into working on felt was a much, much, much more important issue. You know, a 2,000-word story. You know, not so much.
Yep. So last November, I wrote an article in my monthly Inform IT column that talked about web application security and software security. And it was in part prompted by a Silver Bullet episode where I was talking with Jeremiah Grossman. I'm sure you've met Jeremiah.
Oh, yeah.
So here's a question for you. Why so much attention to web apps? What's up with this web app thing?
You mean why so much attention to writing about web app security?
Yeah, as opposed to, say, all the rest of the software which runs the planet.
Right. Well, because web applications...
Is it the Paris Hilton of security?
You know, that's not too much of a stretch, and here's why. You know, the whole user experience online, just in the last 5 years, it has changed vastly. I mean, you know, we were talking before you hit record about Facebook and how you don't do Facebook, and, mm-hmm. You know, I am on Facebook, and...
Yeah, I always tell these people I'm on this small little network called the Internet.
Yeah. See, but, you know, Facebook is an example of, you know, you can constantly update the thing. You can constantly put these customized applications on your profile. And
that's what webmasters are for, right? Right.
Yeah. And then there are things like Twitter, you know, the microblogging site that, you know, I use that as well. And
so it's just the pervasiveness of it and the fact that everybody sees themselves in it, you think?
Yeah, it's everybody, you know, what used to be a really specialized thing maybe 10 years ago, which was the ability to post something online.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, now my grandmother can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's dead, you know.
Right.
Anybody can type something into a box on MySpace or Facebook or Twitter, and boom, they're published.
Right.
And
boy, do we need some editors.
Yeah. but you know, so all of these applications are getting increasingly sophisticated to allow people to do that. And then what's happened at the same time is, you know, people that wouldn't have even thought of purchasing things online 5 years ago. Now everybody's doing it all the time and putting their credit card numbers in. And there's a lot of room for misuse and for going on to a site that you wouldn't even consider being a threat to your security. But, you know, it is, you know. Let's say if you go and you find some website that sells bobbleheads, you know, you have no idea that, you know, maybe you're giving your credit card number to a malicious dummy site.
Yeah, for $2.
And it's this whole Web 2.0 thing where it's become easier and easier, and now it's so easy to, you know, how many people walk into their travel agent now? Everybody books their travel online.
There aren't any travel agents anymore.
I'm sure there are. It's been a while since I've been face to face with one.
Are you sure?
No, but you know what I'm saying, though.
Yep.
So
I wanted to switch gears a little bit on you.
Okay.
And ask you about some politics stuff.
Sure.
So Barack Obama is going to be inaugurated on the 20th.
Yes.
And he may appoint somebody to head up cybersecurity from the West Wing. That's what everybody's saying.
Yeah.
I know that you've talked with Howard Schmidt. I don't know if you've ever met Amit Yoran or not.
I have.
But, you know, you've talked with these guys who have kind of headed up cyber in the past.
Just talked to Amit maybe about a month ago.
There you go. And he's a, you know, great entrepreneur. His time in the government was short. So how can we change the way cybersecurity has been treated in the federal government, do you think?
Well, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. The first reason is, basically what I hear from people like Amit, who, you know, let's face it, he, and maybe he won't say this directly, but he left in frustration.
No, he says it all the time.
You know, but, yeah.
So does Howard, really, if you get down to it.
Yeah, but then when I ask them, hey, should cybersecurity be taken away from the Department of Homeland Security and just be put directly into the White House and given a whole new focus? And what I keep hearing from these guys is, you know, DHS deserves a chance.
Right.
And
well, they'd have to restructure the way it's set up.
Right. There would have to be a restructuring, and obviously it's, you know, to them it's an issue of leadership.
Well, I think it doesn't matter, you know, whether they think it belongs in DHS. I think it's going to end up in the West Wing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think it is too, but I think what's going to happen is a middle road where it's still in DHS, but there's also much stronger
oversight. Yep.
From the White House.
So here's a flyer for you. Who do you think Obama ought to appoint?
Who do I think he ought to appoint? I don't know. Maybe Richard Clark. Give him a chance to.
There you go. He's still a political hot potato, man.
Well, you know, but you know, the sense is he's
9/11 commission.
You know, he's written two books now, really taking the current administration to task. And I'm not going to get into whether I agree or disagree, but
I totally agree. And I sat with Richard on a plane for 5 hours once, and we talked about 9/11 and all that stuff. It's really very fascinating.
It is, but you know, to me, somebody like him, here's a chance where, you know, we've read in his books. And, you know, he's also taken it into the fiction side, too, with the idea of being of, you know, through fiction, bringing attention to, real threats. But at any rate, you know, taking somebody like him and giving him a chance to, okay, here's what you say in your books ought to be done.
Now,
you know, here's a seat at the table. Make it work.
Right. That would be interesting.
And I think that would be interesting to see other people. You know, it would be nice to see Yoren get back in it.
He's not going to do that.
He's not going to do
it. He's busy with NetWitness right now.
Right. I haven't talked to Howard Schmidt that recently. Maybe 6 months ago or longer. So.
Right. Well, we'll probably find out soon enough, is what I believe.
Yeah, but I think you're going to see much stronger oversight from the West Wing, and I think that that's rightfully so. I would love to be the fly on the wall when that person is having the conversation with Obama about his BlackBerry.
Yeah, right. So, last question. I understand that you're a history buff.
I am.
So you might be psyched to learn that my field, where the horses live, was part of a Civil War battle.
Yes, you're in the Shenandoah Valley.
The
right?
Battle of Cool Springs, yep.
Yes.
So what is your favorite historical period to learn about and dive into?
Boy, that's tough. American history is my favorite, all the way back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, which isn't, if you look at the history of other countries, ours is a pretty short one. But I particularly take an interest in anything having to do with both Presidents Roosevelt, because I saw their, you know, their time in office as turning points in history.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm fascinated a lot by Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun right now with a new administration coming in, because
it seems like one of those times, doesn't it?
Doris Kearns Goodwin, she has to be absolutely loving this, because now all of a sudden her book about Lincoln, Team of Rivals, has gotten all of this attention.
That's right. It turned into a catchphrase.
It turned into a catchphrase for how Obama is shaping his administration. So yeah. It's really fascinating to watch.
Super. Well, thanks for your time, Bill.
Thank you.
This has been a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. Silver Bullet's co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine and syndicated by Inform IT. The January-February 2009 issue of IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine examines the thorny issues invoked by an IT monoculture. Most organizations want their machines to be the same, but doesn't this make them all equally vulnerable to even the simplest virus? The issue also features an in-depth look at security issues with Google's Android platform. Subscribe today at www.computer.org/security/BSI-sub. Show links, notes, and an online discussion can be found on the Silver Bullet webpage at www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is Gary McGraw.